Hello and welcome to the Ecocentrics. I'm Tom.
And I'm PK. And this week we're going to talk about fashion.
From fast fashion
to slow fashion.
What's the impact the industry is having on the world?
And how sustainable is sustainable fashion?
Are you ready?
Almost. I just got one more outfit to try on. So, Tom, what are your thoughts about fashion as a whole? Are you fashionable? What do you do in terms of your clothing? How does this come about?
You know, I have absolutely zero fashion sense. You see the things I wear out about? Absolutely none. It disappeared when I was about 16 and I was fed up of buying expensive clothes. Now, nothing matches, nothing works. I'm wearing shoes right now, which have got a whacking great hole in, so my toes stick out the end. I feel like I'm not the person to speak to about fashion, really, in terms of being trendy.
Tom has a collared button-up shirt. He looks quite presentable. I actually ended up changing tops because I was in a sweatshirt, and for some reason, I just didn't feel like I needed to be in a sweatshirt while we had our chat. But Tom, I will give you permission. You can. If you can't get those shoes, that hole cobbled and repaired safely, go ahead and invest in a new pair of shoes. Like I did that recently. I have holes in both of my Birkenstocks. And when I went back and looked at how long I'd had these Birkenstocks that I wear all the time, I got them over 10 years ago and they were really bad. Like I did take them to a local cobbler and he said, just buy a new pair. So I bought a new pair of Birkenstock sandals from Birkenstock, straight from them. And I've decided that's an okay investment because I'll probably have them for 10 years.
And I think that's one of the issues with our fashion industry at the moment. And we'll dig in some of the facts and figures. But fundamentally, things aren't meant to last anymore. We live in a fast fashion world where we buy things which can just disappear. It doesn't matter if they break it in four uses because that's what our economy is designed for at the moment.
You know, I like that point you just made because in terms of like my Birkenstock, which is a more expensive shoe, it is high quality. It is known for that. You do have to have a bit of an outlay. It's not a $5 purchase at Primark. Honestly, I have abused these shoes. I've worked them and I still can actually wear them around the house.
I think there's an interesting question here though. And I always refer back to this. Terry Pratchett's Political Economy of Shoes, where he talks about the fact that actually people on lower incomes can't afford to splash out on those expensive Birkenstocks and get nice expensive shoes, but actually have to spend more money in the long term because they've got to buy the £10 pair of plimsolls from Primark, which only lasts a year. And there is this massive injustice around the clothing economy at the moment, where if you're on a lower income, you have to buy those cheaper clothes which don't last as long, which means you end up spending more money in the long run. And it's just completely unfair. So let's think about some figures, shall we?
Let's talk about the figures, yes.
80 billion garments are made yearly. 80 billion, so that's 10 garments for every single person on planet Earth being made yearly. They are responsible, and this is the bit that's mind-blowing, for 10% of all global emissions. 10% of the entire world's emissions come from our fashion industry and our fast consumption of stuff that we don't really need. We just buy it because someone has put a good out there and makes me feel like I need to wear it. And even more concerningly, this is meant to increase by 50% by 2030.
Wow.
I always talk about climate change on this pod, but there's a whole other dimension to this in terms of the environmental impact. Actually, 20% of all fresh water withdrawals globally come from our fashion industry. 20%. And you can see the physical manifestation of that. If you go onto Google, and we'll put a link in the show notes, or another internet provider, Ecosia, probably the best place to go, and look at the Aral Sea over time. And you can see the Aral Sea, which is just north of Kazakhstan. You can look at its development over time and you can see it shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking to it's pretty much disappeared. And that is the cotton industry of fashion. That is the industry which is it's an ecological genocide as a result of our desire to consume. And we can see that in individual projects. So take a pair of jeans, for example, around about 7,500 liters of water is required to make a single pair of jeans. That's just one pair of jeans, 7,500 litres of water.
Good night.
And what's even more concerning is we don't wear these things for very long. The average dress purchased in the UK is worn a grand total of 10 times.
Well, maybe you, Tom, but I wear a dress a lot longer. But back to jeans, 7,500 to 10,000 litres of water to make.
There's also the other side of our waste industry, because 80 billion garments, only 25% are recycled in the UK. Obviously, on a global scale, the recycling rate's even less. But what that means in the UK is that 300,000 tons of clothes go to landfill every single year. 300,000 tons go to landfill. And not only is that a huge waste for us to process and our environment to deal with, but it's also a massive economic opportunity, which is going down the bin, basically. The amount of things that just get chucked away when they don't need to be, even just taking things to a charity shop instead. Why is the bin the first resort for us?
Yeah. Sometimes when we're talking about the concept of these things in waste and the environment, it can be quite abstract, but having those finite quantitative numbers and data really sort of drive it home. Why is it? You know, and I am guilty as well. I can open up my closet. I'm going through this process now of pulling everything I don't wear and reselling it and getting it back on the market or donating it. And I myself have far, far too much clothing. I could not buy another piece of clothing to the end of my days, which hopefully would be several more decades. And I would still not run out of clothing. I might not be in fashion and keep up with the times, but I still would have plenty of clothing.
And I think there is an interesting question in all of this. We see things like recycling banks and places to send clothes. I know, Pika, you've been doing a bit of digging.
I definitely never throw anything in the bin unless it is something that is just irreparable and would not be a good enough thing to donate to any other organization. Often then I'll cut it up, use it for rags. But I do think the citizens in the UK are pretty good about this. We take our clothing and we donate it to a charity shop. And for those of our listeners who don't live in the UK, our secondhand shops, they are very charity specific. So it might be the Red Cross, it might be cancer research. And then you donate your clothes there and you feel like, wow, I've done a really good thing. My clothes are going to be hung up, bought by somebody else, and the charity makes money. But we donate and get rid of so much clothing, the charity can't resell all of that. They do sell the excess. So 32%, according to RAP, are clothes that sold within the charity shop itself. Now, 60% of that, of the UK's donated clothing, is sent to Africa and Eastern Europe. And the remaining amount is deemed too unusable. So it's not something that we can actually sell in the charity shop, and it's not something we can sell on to another country. Now, when I first heard this data, I remember thinking, well, at least our clothing is being donated to other countries. But what this actually does is it floods out the local market for local clothing makers in those regions. And that mostly displaces certain segments of the population and economy and entrepreneurs, but particularly women. Now, in addition to this, if you go and follow these marketplaces, the amount of clothing that is sent is just too voluminous for even that country's inhabitants to want to buy. So again, much of that clothing that is sold to Africa and Eastern Europe goes to landfill and is incinerated as well. So there's this knock-on effect. While we think we're doing this really great thing for the charity, in the end, a huge portion of that clothing ends up going to landfill. And wouldn't it be better if we just donated some of the money we would have spent on that clothing we're getting rid of directly to the charity? Because money is better directly to the charity, and then not do as much of that clothing waste.
I'm going to go a step even further than that and say, not even to the charities, but directly to those pockets. There's so much evidence that if we send money directly to people, so through organizations like Give Directly, to those families, they make much better decisions than even charities do in those areas, because they know what struggles that they've got more than any of us could know and any organization could realize. So actually sending money directly to the pockets of those people instead, I think that is a much better use of our money.
And there's another element of this. Most of these other countries might not have the stricter environmental and human rights laws that we have here. So that landfill may be located very, very close to a village who is now suffering the impacts of the air pollution and the air quality, or the water pollution driven by our fast fashion, and even luxury fashion is involved in this as well, our desire to have so many pieces of clothing and get rid of them so quickly. So there are other knock-on effects in addition to just knocking out specific labor markets in other countries.
PK, we've spoken a fair bit around the issues of the fashion industry and some of the challenges that exist. But actually, there are people that are starting to change that narrative. Organizations coming through to think about how we can do fashion more sustainably and actually just maybe consume a little bit less stuff generally.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I know you're not into fashion. I do love fashion and I love clothing, but I don't like the environmental impacts of it. So for me, it's all about the sustainability. And on that note, today we have a special guest, Kate Keneally, who founded the sustainable swimwear company, Genre a Swim. Kate, welcome to the pod. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, PK. Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It's an honor. I'm absolutely delighted to be here today.
Kate, I really want to say something I love about your company, Genre a Swim, is when I was looking it up, I think it says sexy with a conscience. And also that your mission statement is to provide a sustainable option to luxury swimwear on the market. Minimal cuts, aesthetic tones, and overall quality that will last many vacations to come. And I think for Tom and I, we have often discussed how people sort of just buy clothes and then toss them away or donate them, and they don't get used for years and years and years, like my Birkenstocks that I've just recently replaced after 10 years of heavy use.
Wow, 10 years out of your Birkenstocks. That's quite impressive, PK.
I know, they look pretty bad.
Yeah, it was such a big thing for me starting my brand to ensure that it wasn't just greenwashing. It was something that I myself would have in my wardrobe forever. And the people who chose to buy into my swimwear, they could rely on it for many summers or many vacations to come. I feel like I'm eliminating people that may live in the sun all year round, such as Australia and stuff. So if they're wearing the bikinis and getting everyday wear out of them, that's great as well.
PK and I've just been having a chat about all of the negative sides of fashion in terms of the emissions, water use, all the exploited labor, that sort of thing. I've read on your website about all the bits of sustainability you do for your brand, but I'd be really interested to kind of hear from your perspective, what is it that makes your swimwear sustainable?
I suppose whenever I was looking at Genre and starting it up, it wasn't just going to be about the product itself. A lot of people look to just buy a product and it says it's sustainable, they use recycled materials, which is all great, but what about all the other components in the brand? You know, the people behind it that make it, where it's coming from, the carbon footprint, the packaging, the labels. There's just so many different components that nowadays there's so much innovation around making it so sustainable, or as sustainable as possible, I guess. And that's the really exciting part of owning a brand and developing a product. So with Genre, it was really important to me to try and utilize as many suppliers within the UK as close as possible. And unfortunately, with the actual swimwear producer, the cost to produce clothing in the UK, if you're going to do it ethically and be completely transparent, is so high. Like, it was just incredibly high and it wasn't working out for me. So the next best place was Portugal. And Portugal is renowned for being incredibly ethical within their supply chains and the use of recycled materials in the fashion industry. They're quite experts at that. And I found a lovely lady that I chatted to a lot across LinkedIn, and she introduced me to her family factory. It was a very small factory and they had access to this particular material that I required, which was Econile. And Econile is basically regenerated nylon, which is, say, ghost fishing nets, plastics collected from the sea and repurposed into this material. And I'm not saying that is the most sustainable way to go down whenever you're starting a sustainable fashion brand, because at the end of the day, there is still fossil fuels involved in regenerating materials. But that was something that really mattered to me. Trying to find sustainable options is something that is at the forefront of my mind every day whenever it comes to Genre Swim. And I suppose with the other components I mentioned, the recycled cardboard boxes and even the swing tag is made out of seed paper. So I encourage people to plant it and grow a little lavender plant for themselves.
I love hearing all that. And I really like a few things that you hit upon, Kate, that you acknowledge there is still some fossil fuel related stuff to that. And I think especially when we're thinking about certain products like swimwear, you know, it'd be really hard for us, you know, our Olympians to do their Olympics in, you know, cotton or wool. You know, there are certain types of clothing and certain types of materials that are best suited for those kind of things. And so it's great that you're using a product that was out there causing a problem and turning it into clothing. So thank you for that.
I'd be really interested to kind of hear your perspective on consumption, because as people that know about the catastrophes that are going on around the world, we need to radically reduce what we're doing and shift to a whole new economic model. And I'd be really interested to see how you come to terms with that on a personal level with your organization and actually what you can do to combat that too?
Individuals out there, young girls, say people who buy into these fast fashion houses, they're not thinking at the time of who it actually really is impacting. Yes, the clothes will end up in landfill and that's devastating. But morally, if people kind of relate to people on a level and how it impacts their families, these people at the bottom of the supplier chains are the ones getting impacted most and getting paid absolutely nothing, working incredible hours. And yeah, I suppose that's just what shaped me as a person to change my behaviors going forward. I don't buy fast fashion. I do buy cheaper clothing. I can't afford like super expensive stuff as much as I wish I could be dripping in designer all the time. But yeah, I'm just a lot more conscious about the clothes that I purchase. I want longevity out of them. I have pieces that have lasted me nearly 10 years that probably do need to go in the bin at some point. But I think if you can attach some kind of sentiment to your clothes whenever you purchase them, and, you know, it keeps them in your wardrobe for a longer time, and you kind of move away from this whole one wear and chuck kind of a ideal. And with the swimwear, I suppose I didn't, a lot of brands, they bring out collections twice, three times, four times a year. I've stuck with my core collection because I think that there's colors in there that suit every skin tone. And there's rungs, and I just want core pieces that people can relate to with the brand, but also keep in their wardrobe forever and be strong quality. And yeah, that's my motto for genre swim, basically.
I'd be really interested to hear your perspective, given the fact that you've been inside some of the big beasts of the fashion industry. What needs to change to make a difference? At the moment, obviously, they dominate the market. They force us to do this fast fashion, the social norms that exist around it. From your perspective, what needs to happen? Is it policy, the mechanisms need to change? Is it finance? How do we get there? And what's the systemic action that needs to happen?
So I think it really comes down to legislation. It's on the government to impose legislation on these fast fashion houses and not hit the people that will be hurt most, but those at the top of the chain, basically. And also on content creators, on social media, those driving these consumer trends. Yeah, I think these are the people that need to make the changes, and hopefully we will all learn as consumers to make better choices in the future.
Burn down the system. And thank you as well for the extra guest in the background. I think that's a nice touch, really.
Yes, next time we'd like to have Murphy on the show. Murphy the dog.
He's booked up, unfortunately.
So I found the things that Kate was saying were really on point to what you and I often go on and on about, Tom, regarding fashion and sustainability.
Yeah, I was nervous going into this interview because I just assume everyone working in fashion is the same and it's just extract, extract, extract. But it was so refreshing to hear Kate speak about things in a different way and actually see a positive light to all of it. And that was really nice to hear. And maybe I should be less cynical of the world, eh?
Yeah, it is nice to hear as well. We wouldn't have asked her to be on if she couldn't stand up to Tom. So we knew it would be okay.
What I didn't get to ask her, though, was if her swimwear was fireproof. That's something I didn't get to ask her. Because the last pair of swimming trunks I had, I was sat having a nice old time at the beach. We just arrived, plonked me bottom down on the sand. All of a sudden, I felt a burning on my bum. Stood up, ran around, and basically my bum cheeks were exposed to the world because someone had buried a barbecue in the sand and I had sat on it and all of the barbecue heat got into my trousers and I was running around with a big burn patch on my bum, and I wanted to make sure that her swimwear would protect my bum in case I sit on a barbecue again.
Oh, Tom, I don't even actually know how to respond to this story. But I do want to know, is there a scar?
Just the dignity that scarred on me, the loss of it completely as I ran around a beach, just bum exposed.
So earlier on, we talked about what happens when you donate your clothes to charity. And we're definitely not saying don't do that. We're just letting you know there's more to the story after you do your donation. But we've noticed a lot of stores now have in-store recycling schemes. So that seems like a really, really great thing. However, what actually happens to the clothes that we drop off in store? Well, Changing Markets did a tracking system, a research project, and from August 2022 to July 2023, they air tagged 21 items of clothing from 10 different fashion brands and put them through that store's take back scheme. And what they found out was that these clothes, 76% of them, were either destroyed, left in warehouses, or exported to Africa. So that's just something to think about as well. A store can have this really great, we do this, but in the end, it's just getting trashed just the same.
So this week, we're going to have a bit of a change of tack. We're going to be looking at a sustainability superstar. There's only one organization we can really be talking about in the fashion sense.
That would be Patagonia's founder. And both Tom and I struggle with the pronunciation of the name. I can't even say pronunciation. So we're now going to pass on to our amazing producer, Emma. How do you pronounce the founder of Patagonia's name, our sustainable superstar this week?
Yvonne Chouinard. That's Yvonne Chouinard. Did I sound like the Google Translate?
So when you go on in one of those YouTube videos, when you're trying to say like a Spanish word or something, da, 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 da. That was perfect for that.
It was. Thank 10 you. Points. 10 points. We nominate you as our official pronunciation person.
Okay, Q, lots of emails telling me I pronounced that incorrectly, but that's how I think it's pronounced.
I think it sounds great. Tom, why is he our fantastic sustainability superstar?
Many reasons. Patagonia, though, have really changed the game recently. They have moved over from their shareholder model, and they have made Planet Earth the company's only shareholder. So they're reimagining actually what it means to think about sustainability. So rather than it being, sustainability is an add-on on the side, actually, it is the core value of that organization now.
One, that's just amazing. I think it's probably a first. And additionally, on top of that, what I've always loved about them is they have advocated, if you can find our clothes secondhand on another site, you know, a site not associated with them where they'll make no revenue from that sale at all, they always tell you, don't buy from us new, buy our product secondhand from Vinted or other sites. And I think that says a lot. That's the exact opposite of what we hear from most clothing companies.
And you can take your stuff in to get it repaired at their shops too. They've trained in-house repairers. Win, 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 win.
Yep. You can get your clothing repaired, backpacks. There's another company in the United States. It's a co-op. It's called REI. It's a beloved company for me, but they've been training their employees to do that for years. I guess they're our runner-up superstar, in my opinion, is that since 2015, they've closed all of their stores across the United States on Black Friday, which is the biggest shopping day of the year. They've paid their 16,000 strong staff to instead have the day off and go outside. And they encourage everyone else to do that as well. And last year, they made the commitment to make that an annual event. So every Black Friday, they opt out and they opt outside. So really quickly, we've decided not to do a quiz this week. We thought something that would be better for you would be solutions. So here are a few things. Do a capsule wardrobe. Look that up. It's really easy. Do the 333 project. It's a minimalist project proving that less is more. Additionally, you could buy stuff on Vinted.
Just make sure you make things last as long as possible. Get them repaired if you can and buy quality if possible. There are also so many amazing organizations which are starting to revolutionize fashion. I saw a company only last week which make products to order. So they only make products that you order. They don't make anything else. And we'll share a link in the show notes with them.
That's fantastic. So that's us this week.
If you want to say Emma has pronounced things wrong, get in touch at hello@theecocentrics.com.
Hey, we'll be back next week.
Until then,
adios.